Thank you to everyone who donated in the Max Fund Drive to support Tights and Fights. We're excited to reward that dedication with bonus episodes that we'll start recording in the next few weeks. There's also a free way to support the show, a 5-star iTunes review, just like this one from James MNND. He says, quite simply, we're the best wrestling podcast, period, in all capital letters. Head over to iTunes and light those fives up. 5, 5, 5. Let's do it.
Tights and Fights Podcast is the perfect wrestling podcast. There's a guy named Hal, and there's Danielle, and this guy, Mike Eagle, is there as well. Tights and Fights Podcast. Tights and
Wrestling podcast,
Welcome to the post WrestleMania week edition of Tights and Fights.
I feel welcome.
Do you feel so welcome?
I feel so welcome.
I woke up at 4:30 this morning.
Why?
I was telling Mike this earlier because my brain is sick, and I wrote a whole rap while I was showering that I promptly forgot because I've been up for a long time, and this is the halfway point of my day.
There we go.
But anyway,
too much.
This is the show that discusses wrestling with the sincerity and hilarity that it deserves. And yes, it's true. It's damn true. I am Hal Lublin. And I'm joined by my fellow members of the Nation of Conversation, the woman who awaits her WrestleMania debut, Danielle Radford.
Oh, hello.
A.K.A. Doris. And making his triumphant return, the mayor of Ferndale.
That's right.
Located next to Scenic Suplex City.
Damn right.
It's Mike Eagle.
Hello.
Hello. Welcome back.
Man, happy to be back.
Well, what a week it's been.
Oh, boy.
Yeah.
So much to talk about. So we've survived over 20 hours of wrestling in the last week, and that includes TakeOver, Raw, SmackDown, 205 Live, pre-shows, the Hall of Fame, and, of course, WrestleMania.
Jeepers.
So we're going to break down all the things we cared about, starting, as always, with NXT TakeOver. DIY and The Revival stole the show, as they did every time they met at previous TakeOvers, but this time they did it with the Authors of Pain in the mix. Now, I'm no Dave Meltzer. I'm not a guy who watches a great match and because it was done in the United States, just give it 3 fucking stars.
Oh,
wow.
My friend
Johnny will not stop with talking about what ratings Meltzer gave a match. And I'm like, congratulations. That guy's been a wrestling fan longer than I have, and he's got a popular newsletter. Still wrestling fan.
I think you're angrier at your friend Johnny than you are, Dave.
I know. I like Johnny.
I don't know if you really like Johnny.
I think you are burying Johnny.
I thought that this was perhaps the best tag team match that I've seen probably in the last 15 years.
Wow.
And I would maybe stack it up against the match that DIY and Revival had where DIY won the belts.
Mm-hmm.
The Authors of Pain, I thought, fit seamlessly. I thought they looked like monsters. I thought they kept up. Do you both agree, Danielle? I keep seeing the finger pop out. You're ready to speak.
Now,
what do you
think? You've never been to PWG, right?
I haven't.
That is what PWG feels like.
That's okay. True.
Every match is that match, and by the end, you're sweaty and tired.
Yeah.
All right.
And so, no, I agree. That is one of the best tag team matches that I have seen on the product in a really, really long time. The Authors of Pain were great. I can't stop thinking of them as toddlers now. Thanks, Mike.
Sorry, man. Call them like I see them, and I see big-ass children.
Big babies.
They look like big babies.
It's like NBA Jam, where you'd set the players to big head mode.
They look like big babies. But, man, it was such a great, and it had so many of those great little moments, like when they would team up together to do their own moves. It started what wound up being the theme of the weekend, which was wrestlers being smart about dominant, huge folks,
right,
and being like, well, we've got to team together to take the dominant big folks out. And that theme went throughout the entire weekend, but that was the beginning of it. And so I thought that that was really interesting that so many matches in this weekend had such a cohesive theme.
It's the only way any of us has a chance to win. We have to get rid of the biggest threat.
It was not, everyone felt super smart this weekend, and that was the beginning of it. And so I expect to see
more
kind
smarts.
Of smart wrestling
especially,
on NXT.
Especially and baby so, faces, man. You hate to see a dumb baby face. That just hurts your heart, man.
It hurts you.
You know, it does.
Yeah.
You know, I think what's happened is that they start doing stuff just to make an excuse to do a cool spot, but right. a lot of times a cool spot ends up making the baby faces look stupid, you know, because something is obviously about to happen and they act like it's not, and then they walk into it. Like, you know what I mean? Like, that happens a ton. I mean, even in that match, there's this one spot where the Authors of Pain have Johnny Gargano up outside the ring. Ciampa, like, runs the ropes back and forth twice, like he's about to jump out at them, and they're just waiting with Johnny to throw him into Ciampa.
Yeah.
And like, why are you running at them if they got your boy up like that? Like, what are you about to do, really?
that is fair. He was getting ready to do a running, jumping nothing, because they do that a lot, where it's like, what were you doing? Why were you jumping? What were you doing before you were going to get hit with the very European uppercut? Right. Like, were you just jumping? Because jumping is fun. It is fun. I've played Mortal Kombat. Jumping is awesome. But like, what were you doing?
So now the Revival have made their debut on the Raw roster, and I would argue of those three teams, and certainly even of the two between DIY and Revival, maybe I'll just go ahead and say it. I think Revival is the smartest tag team that WWE has right now in terms of how they work and their psychology. So they literally upset the apple cart, except it was ice cream, on Monday Night Raw. Do you think, Mike, the style they bring, which is more ground and pound, you go ahead and, like, it's something like no flips. Just punches.
Just fists.
Yeah, that's right. No flips, just fists.
You know, I got to say, man, where we sit right now, I'm worried, because I feel like what I saw them do on Monday, and I loved it because it made a lot of sense. They went in there looking to injure and looking like violent, physical guys.
Right.
I believe we talked about this before, but it looked exactly like what they're supposed to be doing with Gallows and Anderson and what they do when Gallows and Anderson are being booked right. So I'm like, man, I don't see any way to really differentiate. And I imagine this will probably be addressed in the Superstar shakeup, and they'll get those guys on separate shows, hopefully.
They can't be on the same show.
Yeah, because that's what I'm worried about.
Because that's exactly what, you're right, that's exactly what Gallows and Anderson should be doing. And they were so smart about it because, like, of course you take out Xavier because Xavier is the weak link in that team. And of course, afterwards, you injure Kofi because Kofi is such a dynamic, unpredictable, he'll jump, dynamic, unpredictable part of that team.
The moral of this show, jumping is fun.
It is fun.
It's so much fun.
Hit that A button. Watch him jump. Jump. Let's talk about a few other debuts. We saw the takeover debuts of Cassius Ohno, Ruby Riott, and Aleister Black. Indie fans may know them better as Chris Hero, Heidi Lovelace, and Tommy End. Are you guys fans of their pre-NXT work? And I will say that I have not seen any of their non-WWE work, so I'm going to sit back and let you guys talk. Mike?
So from going to PWG, I saw Tommy End a couple times.
Yep.
And he was very impressive
so
to me.
Good.
I saw him wrestle, I think, Zack Sabre Jr. one time, and he had a fucking amazing match. Oh, and something else I saw him. He's always been a joy to watch because all his movements are crisp, his offense makes sense, and his persona is very believable. You know, it was a very familiar refrain to hear in the crowd at the PWG show, Tommy fucking end. So
wow.
I don't know if you're going to get that Aleister fucking Black chant going. But even watching his takeover debut, I felt like, okay, this is a guy that they can really work with. And Cassius Ohno, what the hell is his real name?
Chris Hero.
Yeah.
Probably also not his real name.
Right.
He's of the Boston Heroes.
Oh, yeah. What was his name when he played for the 92 Dream Team since he was wearing their fucking outfit on Saturday night?
I have so many opinions about that outfit. We're going to have to cover that in a fashion corner.
Fashion corner for sure. But see, that's the thing. Chris Hero, even at PWG when he's Chris Hero, same fit. You know what I mean?
Same
outfit. Just different teams or different personalizations. But
like
Cena
did that.
Always like this kind of shortish jersey tucked into the trunks looking like it.
Oh, so he's like the uncle who's over. He's like, he's staying on the couch and he wears basketball jerseys. And then you realize, like, oh, I can totally see his nuts. He doesn't know. He's not doing it on purpose. He's just gross and not aware of his clothing.
The tuck-in is such a problem. He looks like Diesel in a onesie. Just like beautiful, long hair. And then, so that's, we'll talk about it. And he is another one who has like a great chant, which is always, Chris Hero ain't nothing to fuck with.
Chris Hero ain't nothing to fuck with.
Because you see, Chris Hero is a big rap music fan.
Oh, of course.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Uh-huh. That's why he wears those 1970s bolts.
Throwback jerseys.
Throwback shorts before they went to the culottes. I appreciate it.
Before we move on, because we have a ton to get to, somebody smart me up very quickly on Heidi Lovelace, because
I've never seen her.
I thought she looked great.
She looked great. She might be like a shimmer, which shimmer is dope, and I don't catch nearly enough of it.
All right.
But she looked great.
She did. Well, more to come.
Yeah.
On the woman now known as Ruby Riott.
That's a great name, by the way.
Yeah. Ruby Riott is such a good name.
Way good.
Oh, it's so
That's
good.
Not a term, what I'm saying. I'm just going to keep repeating.
Way good.
That's the next WrestleMania theme song.
Could somebody please, if you're out there, if you're a fan of the show and you're in music and you're not Mike Eagle, because he's doing enough, God knows, will you please make Way Good and do a WrestleMania theme
song? Way good.
Just sample that part.
Also, I'm sorry, just a quick note. Flo Rida in Florida. Why the fuck wasn't I invited to be in his house? I'm so mad.
Let's go back to the titles. We're talking about Asuka right now, who retained the women's title over Ember Moon, but she did so via cheating. She's a heel now. I love this. I'm going to give my opinion first.
Hello.
I love that after mowing through the women's division, including Bayley, for over a year at this point, she's now run into the one person she can't beat straight up. And so she was willing to cheat to keep her title. No, and I want to see her with a heel run before she... they don't need her on WWE yet. She needs to build up this crop of women.
Quick question.
Yes.
Caveat for me with all of the takeover thing is that I watched it in a hotel room while I was on a phone call. So I watched it all with the sound off. And I have to watch every match over again. But I don't remember her cheating. What did she do to cheat?
She pushed the referee into Ember Moon.
Yeah.
On the top.
Okay. Ember Moon was about to hit the eclipse.
Oh, okay. Mm-hmm. Nice.
And so, but that's what I love is that, like, the story of that match becomes almost the same as, like, you know, that fucking New Japan 628 star match where it was like, if Ember Moon would have gotten off the eclipse, does she win?
Right.
And the fact that, yes, like, Asuka has just, she's been able to just fucking strike people into submission and, like, get them out before, but now she's finally met someone that's so on her level that she's like, oh no, I want this. I want to stay the Empress of the Sun so bad that I will cheat on this moon-ass bitch. And I loved it. She is a moon-ass bitch. She's a sexy werewolf. I'm here for it. I live for how much of a sexy werewolf Ember Moon is.
I would prefer to see in this situation Ember Moon continue to chase for a while.
Yeah, me too.
Yep.
Do you guys agree? Would you rather see a strong heel run out of Asuka before she goes to WWE?
I would, but I really, really think it's cool that she is a tweener that works. That right now you can put her up against anybody. She can appear to be a babyface and appear to be a heel, and I think that's just a special position to be in. So I hope that it doesn't become permanent. I kind of like her malleability as a character.
I think she's the only one where it's like, I don't need her to be a face or a heel. I just need you to be Asuka.
Right.
Like, I don't need, and she's one of the few people that works on. That being said, we do lack good, strong heels in the women's division. Obviously, Bliss is great. She's great on the mic. She's not super physically imposing. And you have Nia Jax, who is super physically imposing. And then she talks, and then she's like, hi, guys. and she's gorgeous, and she's lovely, and I love her. But as soon as she talks, she says, like, oh, hey. okay, bye. And so to have someone who Asuka can talk if she needs to, not much, but
has an effective handle on the language for sure.
Exactly. Yes. And she uses it effectively, like you say, and then also she is so Asuka gonna kill you.
Right.
That's not just some things that we chant.
Right.
It's a true story. So getting her on any one of the rosters, whichever roster does eventually get her, it's gonna be a gift.
All right, let's talk about Shinsuke Nakamura, who had his final match at NXT.
Clap, 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 clap.
It was unsuccessful in regaining the NXT championship from Bobby Roode. Where do you guys think this match falls in the body of his work in NXT?
I loved it. Like, just this weekend, so many good stories of matches. Like, I really feel like finally kind of, I mean, because part of the thing that we love so much about Sasha Bailey Brooklyn was that it was such a good story. And we don't always get matches where it's such a good story. It's a lot of spot fests. And this was like easily... easily, even if you don't necessarily agree that it was one of Shinsuke's best matches, you cannot deny it was like Bobby Roode's best match at NXT.
Right.
You cannot deny that. And also, just going into it with Shinsuke being like, you know, I am here because I am representing the fans, and Bobby Roode being like, I'm here because it's the Bobby Roode show, and that different dynamic and how it played out in their entrances. To have Shinsuke come out and it's just him, and he's like, because it's not about me, I'm going to do my Shinsuke stuff, I'm going to dance, I'm going to whatever, I'm not going to have 80 million violin players, I'm not going to do that because this is about the fans. And then for Bobby Roode to come out to dueling fucking pianos, like, it doesn't get more clear which one is like, I am fighting for the people and I am fighting for myself. And that dynamic played out throughout their entire match. It was beautiful.
Between this match and their last match, and also, which we'll talk about a little bit later, the Rollins-Triple H match, I'm starting to like not like matches where it's like a bunch of leg work. I feel like, I feel like like there's something about that kind of body part targeting and the selling that has to happen that to me, like, it just drags the match down a little bit. Like, I kind of want to see, I end up watching a guy try to remember to sell his leg. You know what I mean? And like, it just, I don't know. I'd rather not have to deal with that and just have him have a straight up match. And I feel like especially Roode and Nakamura only had two matches, right?
Right.
And I feel like they both basically had the same story with the leg thing.
He legit hurt himself.
Did he?
In the first match.
Oh, okay. I thought it was storyline.
So
I didn't
then
know
that carries over to the second match where he knows that's a weakness. But also, his finisher is a running knee.
Right.
So the best way to beat it, I mean, it's Shawn Michaels and Mankind at Mind Games in 1997, where Shawn Michaels spends a lot of time working on Mankind's hand, so he can't do the mandible claw.
Right.
It's such a devastating finisher.
I mean, you know, even with like, you know, when you have Sasha Bailey and there's all that hand stomping, I think that's different than a leg. Because, you know,
it's very dynamic because it's like the leg on the hand. It's you've got that like cross body thing. And it's not because if it was just like literally if it was just Sasha like grabbing Bailey by the hand with her hands and being like, oh, I got your fingers, like that also might not be as dynamic as someone
stomping. I'm interested to see what Nakamura does on the main roster now that he's there.
He is there. As you pointed out, he made his debut on the Blue Brand along with Ty Dillinger. Oddly, Ty Dillinger came out to wrestle a match against Curt Hawkins. And actually made Curt Hawkins look good, but got the win. Nakamura.
10 years of developmental, baby.
Let me ask you this: Nakamura's introduction was after a Miz and Maurice segment.
Well, like in the middle of it, weirdly.
In the middle of it, he came in and sort of cut them off. It almost felt like something was supposed to happen there that didn't.
Yeah, because they didn't interact.
Yeah, Nakamura arrives, and then he comes out with your college chum, who played him in. And he does his entrance. The crowd goes crazy. He does his Spider-Man. I wish he had web shooters on his wrists. I feel like that place would look like a Halloween party by the time he was done. It'd be awesome.
To be fair, I want all the wrestlers to have
web shooters.
Web shooters.
That's only fair. But
chemical, not organic.
When he well, you know what? When I was
Nerds.
A kid, I couldn't have invented web shooters.
Oh God.
So, I just found it odd that he came in ostensibly without an issue with anybody, when they have sort of a tailor-made program. The Miz is the perfect guy to put him over in his first match. There's no interaction there. Do you feel like the entrance is enough with him?
I had questions about that. First of all, I think that the intro in the middle of Miz and Maurice's segment and not having them interact at all was a little awkward.
A little weird.
A little awkward. And then, let's get an issue going. Let's do something. Like,
yeah, good entrance, but also, this is a wrestling show. So it would have been
nice. And if we know anything about Danielle, she wants wrestling.
She does.
On the wrestling show.
I just want some wrestling on the wrestling show. So it would have been nice if after that, and I think you give him all of that. You give him the surprise dude playing the violin so that the three people who were there who were like, why is this dude suddenly playing the violin? Is he going to come out and bash people with the violin? Who is violin dude? Is that violin man? Is that an NXT dude that I don't know?
Right. This NXT crop's awfully small these days.
Oh, here's what they could have done.
Uh-oh. Hal's got the book.
All right.
Give him the pencil.
So you have Miz making fun of Cena, Miz and Maurice making fun of Cena and Nikki Bella, saying they're not going to come back. And they reenact the proposal, which they did with the giant fake ring, which is
which
hilarious.
Had me on the floor.
I wish the camera, the camera tried to get a shot of it, but she had her hand in front of her boob.
Yeah, and she kept trying.
So they were
to...
like, "Oh, we better stop." You like he goes even more over the top and has like an orchestra out to play. And then out of that orchestra steps
comes
your
the
buddy,
violinist.
Ah,
that would have been so
like, and it looks like they're doing a proposal.
Yeah. Oh.
And then it comes out, and then all of a sudden there's fucking Shinsuke.
And he, then Lee starts shredding and shit. And then
you have him face off. You have Miz do his take.
I got goosebumps, Hal.
Yeah.
From from your booking.
That's how you do it.
Ah.
That's how you do it. And then you have your first program, and Miz is gonna put him over. Of course. He will.
Of course he will.
He's a team player who works his ass off.
But Miz need to go over somebody now. He's built up too much steam for himself. I think he needs another belt.
Money in the Bank.
I think it's time.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, I
money
think it's
in
Money
bank
in the
will
Bank.
Be good for Miz.
Oh my God.
Oh, just looming over everybody.
Oh my God. How good would he be with Money in the Bank?
Oh, man.
Oh, well, we just sealed it, so now Money in the Bank. I was going to make a joke that it's going to Maurice, but that would also be good.
Social media boards were so active with everybody excited to talk about wrestling. And if you'd like to join them, head to facebook.com/group/tightsfights or hit us up at tightsfights on Twitter. Best wrestling community online anywhere, promise. When we come back, we're going to discuss the highs and lows of WWE's biggest pay-per-view of the year. That's up next on Tights and Fights.
What's the deal with Brexit? Have you seen Happy Valley yet?
How do British people pronounce Edinburgh, Leicester, or Norwich?
Not like that.
Are you tired of getting your world news from reliable sources, often with no puns or sexual innuendo?
Why was there a butcher's hat haunting Coronation Street?
What's Coronation Street, and why is Dave Holmes obsessed with it?
International Waters pairs a team of comedians in LA against a team of comedians in London in a pop culture battle royale. Join us once a fortnight to hear the best comedians in the world trade jokes and stories and maybe even learn something at the same time. International Waters with me, Dave Holmes. Find it at MaximumFun.org or wherever you download podcasts.
Internet. I'm your husband host, Travis McElroy.
And I'm your wife host, Teresa McElroy.
And together we present Schmanners.
It's extraordinary etiquette
for ordinary occasions.
We explain the historical significance of everyday etiquette topics, then answer your questions relating to modern life.
So join us weekly on MaximumFun.org or wherever podcasts are found.
No RSVP required.
Check out Schmanners.
Manners, Schmanners. Get it?
Tights and Fights Podcast. Tights and Fights.
Welcome back to Tights and Fights. I'm Al Lublin, and I'm joined
y'all
with
y'all missed the joke.
Danielle Rester.
We will not tell you what it is. Who else is in here? Who is that? Who's that sweet voice I hear?
Oh, I'm sorry, it's me, Mike Eagle.
That's right, it was you.
I didn't.
It was you.
I thought it was somebody else.
It was you all along.
Mr. Mean Guy.
That's right. God damn it.
WrestleMania is the longest, most exciting, and most exhausting WWE show of the year. And just like every year, it serves as a sort of season finale to the WWE before the next season starts the next day on Raw. So let's get right to the main event of the evening, where Roman Reigns became the second man to defeat The Undertaker at WrestleMania. Good job, Vince. This was Undertaker's retirement match. Was this the best send-off he could have gotten? Nope. Danielle, what do you think?
I think that this is what they had. I think that he kept trying to go and come back, and I think that he hit the wall. And so they were like, not WWE, but maybe like a doctor or his wife was like, you gotta stop. And so, yeah, it's not necessarily ideal, but it was what was already on the books. I mean, obviously, we can think of all of the people that we would have liked to have seen do that. It would have been great if it was Kane. It would have been great if it was any of these like older dudes that he's got like a connection with that did it. Because what young guy can you think of that anyone would have been super psyched retired Undertaker? Like, no one. You want it to be the nostalgia thing. You want it to be someone he worked with.
I don't know.
No, because I think whoever it is going to get some blowback. And so why not Reigns?
Why not let
him soak in that new... He already has nuclear heat. Why not let him soak in more of it?
I don't know. I feel like it would have been better in service of a younger wrestler who had been booked well up until that point where it made sense. And that's the thing. Like, because to me... The supernatural gimmick
guy. I mean, you should have put Bray. We should have put Bray Wyatt over 2 years ago. You know what I mean?
It like
that's
been cool.
That's when it would have made sense. And I don't. I just think unless you're gonna pull the trigger on this Reigns heel turn, which they don't. I mean, it's just they're just fucking with us at this point. You know what I mean?
Well, he's basically a heel, guys. Which I told y'all, by the way. I'm gonna keep saying it. I told y'all that they were gonna play the whole. He's really a heel. He can just be a heel without us saying he's a heel.
Well,
I knew it.
We're going to come back to that in a second. I will say I think that
come back to your face in a second.
Go ahead. Come on back to my face. It'll still be adorable. I do think Roman Reigns is going to take on the same role that Asuka has, where it doesn't matter who he's facing.
No.
He just fights. Better or worse. That's just a theory I'm throwing out there. However, whoever beats him gets a rub. Roman Reigns gets a rub off of it, even though it's not as special anymore because it already happened. If I were going to put Bray Wyatt over Undertaker, I would have done it in 2014 when he was really hot.
Mm-hmm.
'Cause they had not started booking him poorly. Like, he's 50-50 at best right now. Back then, if I remember correctly, he was mostly rolling through people.
Yep.
So him defeating The Undertaker then not only would have been a gigantic shock because The Undertaker never loses, but it would have been a gigantic shock because Bray Wyatt hasn't even been in the business that long.
Right.
You're a gigantic shock.
I am a gigantic shock because it's shocking how cute I am.
It is shocking. He's so cute.
You are so cute. You're right.
But let's talk a little bit about that moment on Raw. I mean, I have to say that is maybe my favorite thing that Roman Reigns has ever done.
Oh, yeah.
And
for
I
sure.
guarantee you, while they told him, gave him an idea of what was going to happen, he handled that so well. The number of times he raised the mic. Like, he knew exactly when to drop the hammer. He knew how to get them built up. He said the exact right thing, which I'm sure they went over. Like, he played it perfectly. And after watching that, I don't care if he's a heel or face. The fact is, the guy puts on good matches with pretty much everybody he faces. Undertaker was a tough one just because he's hurt. And they didn't – I get what they were playing up where he just wouldn't go down and he was hurt, but I wanted to see like the pained gunslinger a lot more out of him where he just couldn't do it. It felt because if those mistakes were planned, they did not look planned
no,
at all.
Well,
they
yeah,
looked
the,
like just mistakes.
I think that the problem is that we wanted to see that the pained gunslinger.
Yeah.
But to do that, the person doing it has to not be pained.
Right.
It doesn't work if the last gunslinger is actually like super dead. Like if he's actually injured and hurt and he physically cannot come back, which is why they probably should have had him do it a couple of years ago when he was healthy enough where he could have sold it as like, I'm hurt, but I'm injured and I'm fighting and now I'm dead. Instead, it's just like, oh no, like me, the real guy. Who is married to Michelle McCool and has children that I love, cannot get off of this mat. Okay. It physically cannot happen.
Fair enough. Moving on, while Taker retiring bummed the crowd out, one thing that didn't was a surprise announcement that the tag team ladder match would be a fatal four-way instead of a triple threat. And who was that fourth team? Let's find out via a clip.
What? It's all about to be broken.
We need video, man. We need these mark out moments
on
camera.
Yeah, we need these on camera.
Mm-hmm. I love that Jeff Hardy skips to the ring now.
I know, and they're such large skips.
Yeah, he's a big boy. He takes big boy skips.
Them Jinkos, man, you gotta skip.
Well, if you haven't guessed it already from that music and the words. In their second ladder match of the weekend, the Hardy Boys joined the club, Sheamus and Cesaro, and Enzo and Big Cass in the Raw Tag Team match and won. They are your Raw Tag Team Champions.
Woohoo!
Let's talk for a second about how we feel about them not only coming back, but more importantly, getting the belts. Do we think that that helps build the division, or does it sort of stunt the growth of some of these teams? Like, they finally have three teams vying for the belts. They can maybe trade them back and forth while they're building up other teams. Do you think the Hardys fit into that mix, or do you think they actually – is it another case of we're going with old over new? Danielle?
Normally, I would say no, not old dudes. Go with new dudes. But all of that – the tag divisions on both sides have been so, like, underwhelming as of late, that like I don't mind them injecting someone else in to be like, hey, pay attention to the tags. They're like, there is something interesting happening in the tag stuff, because they haven't really been doing anything with it. And also, I just have to say once again, this is the only time I have successfully fantasy booked WrestleMania. I am as to like a god.
Well done, Danielle. Mike, what do you think?
I'm going to say more stuff into my microphone, see if it happens.
I am in awe of Danielle's powers. Let me just say that.
We all are.
Because, I mean, they are better than Bray Wyatt's powers.
Yes.
Oh, yeah. I actually made something happen.
I like them having the belts. I do like them having the belts. I think what concerns me is something I spoke to earlier, that in most divisions other than the regular guys division, so if we're talking about tag teams, we're talking about women, they don't seem to be able to make any issues between entities, between acts that don't involve the title. Because what you can do here that's great is if the Hardys come in and get the titles, and you can have the club, whoever feels jilted, go after them for the titles and have a feud there, and then try to build a feud between some other teams based on some personal issue. Try to write something to make that happen. But they don't seem to be doing that a lot lately at all.
It just, you have 3 hours, guys.
Right.
Like, you can have more than one tag team thing happening. You can have more than one women's thing happening.
You know?
And 205 Live is also there.
Right, but let me point out very quickly, I do agree with what both of you are saying, but when you are in any division, if you're in the Intercontinental division, which I don't really have, you're in the mid-card, you should, everything you're doing, the long game is trying to win the IC title. If you're a tag team, you're trying to win those belts. Now, if something happened in that ladder match between the two teams that are not the number one contender, which would be Enzo and Big Cass and the club, then there has to be something, there has to be an issue set off between the two of them, in that both of them were vying for the title and they got in each other's way. So if they eliminate the other, then that moves them up the ladder. So right. The personal issues, I agree with that, but it has to be going after that title.
Yeah, no, they should never not care about the title, but and what naturally would service that is if they cared who the number one contender was and if there was a ladder built in, but they don't seem to think that way. Like, they only have, like, the writers or the bookers, whoever this is, only seem to have in their purview who has the title and who's going for it. And what that leaves is a bunch of teams just off TV half the time.
All right, well, let's talk about a few other returns. Finn Balor and Evil Emma are officially back on Raw. Are you guys excited?
Yes.
Me too.
I was very, very entertained by Emma.
Yeah.
Very, very entertained by heel Emma.
Good.
And she's a different kind of heel than Charlotte or Nia.
Yep.
So I think there's room for her there.
Mm-hmm.
And she made a good showing, and I hope that they keep some attention on her. And we can forget about that Emelina shit, man.
Well, you have been waiting for so long. But let's get back to Mania, where Kevin Owens defeated Chris Jericho for the U.S. Championship. Remember, that thing exists. This could ostensibly be the blow-off to their feud, or they could have another match coming up at Payback. If this was the culmination of that entire storyline, are you satisfied? Mike?
I think the match didn't have the heat that I wanted, and I don't know why that is. I've heard some people posit that maybe it's because, like, that was such an emotional feud that it needed blood or something to put it over and make it special. But, you know, the match for what it was, a straight-up one-on-one match, it was good. Something was missing, but it also might have just been a side effect of 7 hours of wrestling all at one time, you know, so it was hard to kind of know even what we got from match to match. But as a storyline, best friends, guy turns on each other, one-on-one match, one guy goes over, that's the best you can hope for a storyline. And for them to continue it, ultimately it has to end somewhere, so I don't mind it ending at WrestleMania in a one-on-one match.
Danielle?
I agree, and I also think that with Jericho being such a, like, he's still like a fighting legend. He's a legend that still has his knees and his back and his hips, so he's still like a fighting legend.
That DDP yoga.
DDP yoga. So for him to, the ideal is when you bring in these older dudes to have them make something special or to have them rev up a division or something, you're doing it in service of saying, hey, this is a dude that you love, and this other dude beat that dude clean. So that is the most ideal outcome.
All right. Yeah, I'm with you. I mean, Jericho's on his way out. There's no There's no disguising that. He already has tour dates booked. So there's no need. He doesn't need the win.
Right.
Really. He can go. He can come back later on and wrestle Owens again.
Yeah. Go do your Muppet-themed rock band or whatever it is that you're doing.
Let's talk about McMahons who are in matches at WrestleMania. Shane McMahon took on AJ Styles, and Triple H, with Stephanie in his corner, wrestled Seth Rollins. Now, AJ and Shane kicked off the show and had probably a better match than most people would have thought, even though it's AJ Styles, and he could have a good match with nobody if he was wrestling a ghost. That would be good. That being said, to what extent did this exceed your expectations as a match? Danielle?
I wasn't expecting Shane to be able to do anything wrestle-like. And again, he was very ginger. He was very like, I am the boss. Like, he was literally doing that thing where it's like every time he moved AJ around, I could literally see him calculating things in his head. Like, okay, if I mess this up, then he's going to miss this many days. And we've got to pay for this long in the hospital. And we just paid for Seth's new knee twice. So
he's got,
gently.
He's got a clock and a hit. It's been 3 minutes since our last blown spot.
So it was fun. Like, it wasn't great because Shane is Shane, but AJ, again, he could make a broom look good, you know, like, yeah. That, like, you know, that broom from Breaking One where it's just like Turbo dancing with a broom
or Moppy. WWE broom just sitting there not doing anything,
just sitting there not doing anything,
collecting
and then
a paycheck.
And then there's AJ just making it look good. And so no matter what, he was going to make it look good. I was very highly entertained by how gentle Papa Shane was, but it was fine. It was a fine match.
I enjoyed it. There was a couple of let's make Shane look like a wrestler spots that went a little too far.
Mm-hmm.
Like I said, there was a lot of competitive hugging going on in those submissions that Shane was doing. It looked very cozy and not at all painful.
Right.
So I think if they had cut that out, we really would have had some. But it was good. It was good. I thought it was good. I was emotionally invested in it. Happy the right guy went over the right way. And also happy with how they resolved it on SmackDown.
All right. Let's turn our attention to the Architect versus the King of Kings. Spoiler alert. The four of us, actually, Julian as well, were all texting one another during WrestleMania live. And talking about this match, I think at some point I was like, this match is way, way, way too long. That was right before the spot where Triple H was bumped into Stephanie, who then went through the table.
And at that point, it turned into a sex thread for me. I cannot tell you all how much I love that spot.
Me too.
That was a great spot.
Does it forgive how long and plodding some of the other points of the match seemed?
No.
Not at all. And it was what I was speaking to earlier, for me personally, you know, working a leg for 20 minutes, not only is it kind of one note for a match, but it restricts the mobility of the super dynamic babyface who part of the reason he's over is his athleticism. And so I wasn't getting what I wanted out of the match personally.
Yeah, I get that it's that thing of like the Architect versus like the educated feet of Triple H or fucking whatever.
The educated feet.
Y'all know y'all missed educated feet. You know you missed educated feet.
Exploit!
But so it's like, I get it. But that match is like, yeah, we get it, Hunter. You can go 25 minutes. But do you have to? Do you have to go 25 minutes? But that bump with Stephanie was perfect because it was exactly what it needed to be. She was where she shouldn't have been, and she was accidentally knocked into a table that was there. It's exactly how that bump needed to happen, and she looked dead.
And makes the heel look stupid. You know, like both heels.
Yeah.
It makes them look dumb. Rollins doesn't have any of that weird misogyny heat for hurting her.
Yep.
Like, and it was the heat that was needed because she has been untouchable for so long.
Yeah.
So when she went through that table, crowd fucking lost it.
Yep.
And it was time to go home.
The last time that she really had that much heat that she just kept was when Vicky Guerrero retired.
Mm-hmm.
So it was perfect.
Yep.
And especially her being off Raw was great. I loved it.
All right. I loved it too. And because she was incapacitated, we found out the next night that Kurt Angle himself is the new GM of Raw. I'm going to ask for this is a very quick one because we haven't had enough time to evaluate it. Do you think it should be a heel or face Kurt Angle eventually who is the GM? Michael, go to you first.
I think he should be a baby face, but he should be able to turn on toughness at any moment. And he should also keep saying WWE.
Okay. Danielle.
WWE. I agree. I will take either, but I'm kind of over the heel GM. We already have the authority. Why do we need a heel GM? He should stay a face.
I'll say baby face, and in the course of trying to be a baby face, he becomes a monster heel. Let's talk about the heavyweight titles at Mania. Brock Lesnar finally beat Goldberg for the Universal Championship, and Randy, the vanilla, he's like,
he's just like
Julian and I were
cream
talking,
cream cheese,
texting each other. I would call him flavorless skim milk.
Yeah, man.
Oh, or like a when you get that like fat-free cottage cheese.
Mm-hmm.
I just like, ah, what do I put in you, like a pineapple? How do I help this be food?
Yes. Anyway, he beat the man who has power over projectors for the world title. Lesnar Goldberg, let's talk about that first very quickly because it was a very quick match. I thought it was the perfect version of the match that they needed to have at WrestleMania and the perfect blow-off for that feud. What do you guys think, Danielle?
Just enough. That was as much of them as I wanted to see, because anything after that, and they would have been too tie-tie. So it was time for nap-nap. Oh, so sleepy. So this is like, this was perfect. They got in all of the moves that you wanted them to do. Someone got suplexed a bunch. Someone got speared real big. Perfect. This was all that I needed it to do. And bye-bye, Brock. We'll see you at SummerSlam.
Nice.
Does this wash the taste of WrestleMania 20 out of your mouth, Mike?
Absolutely, and I think it was a perfect match. I mean, they basically told a fantastic comic book level story with four moves. Goldberg no selling the initial suplexes, and the camera angle they got that from, where Brock's turning around to celebrate, bam, he got hit with a spear. It's like, holy shit! Like, I think that was the perfect way to book that, and kudos to them for putting that match on.
Yeah, absolutely. Let's shift over to that brave, underutilized underdog, Randy Orton, who finally, finally gets that strap.
It's been such a long, hard road.
I know. I'm just so happy for him.
I'm so proud he was able to stick through it with all of the hardship he had being Randy Orton.
You know.
Yeah. Just, it's so nice to see the good guy win. And just like, the guy, you know, earlier on, like the middle of his career when he was doing the Legend Killer thing, ugh, but now he's oozing charisma.
I guess for me, I popped for the projector the first couple times. I was like, ooh, Bray has power, something gonna happen. And then it was just like, oh, he has the power of a green screen.
Well, it didn't do anything.
It didn't help him.
And then also, when at SmackDown, when the lights went down, it didn't do shit either, because he won there too.
And when the lights went off on SmackDown, he just walked like 8 feet. That was it. And they act like something magical happened.
That nigga was going to the bathroom.
That was I think he was running out and he tripped. No, I better sit here and act like this was supposed to be the trick. If I just start laughing? Will that get it over?
You could almost hear the sound of the cartoons of him sneaking. All right, let's talk about the last couple of titles. We're not going to talk about the IC title because it was in the kickoff show.
Jesus Christ.
If they don't care about it, why should we? Bayley retained the Raw Women's title, and Naomi won the SmackDown Women's belt. What did you guys think of the Fatal 4-Way Elimination match for the Raw title? I thought it was okay, but too short.
It was okay, but too short. It was fine. It still would have been better if it was a two dudes. Two dudes!
What we talk? I forgot what we were talking about.
The women's match. Yeah.
The women's. Oh, okay.
Fatal
Them
4-way.
Teaming
Got
up
it.
On Nia Jax was the best part, and then after that,
it fell apart after that, and it went too fast. I felt like when we were texting, I was saying I felt like it got cut for time. It just didn't make the drama wasn't there at all, and I don't understand to this day why they ended Charlotte's pay-per-view win streak, and you still had, and this was the payoff for WrestleMania. I don't.
Yeah,
get it.
I will say it did redeem Bayley. That was one thing, is it, in my brain, it redeemed Bayley for her weird kind of like mushy win before. Mm-hmm. She feels like more of a champion now, so kudos.
All right, and obviously, Danielle, you enjoyed a great deal that Naomi got to have her big moment on the main show instead of the pre-show.
Yes!
And in a great position. Weren't they like right before the main event?
Yep.
It was fantastic. Naomi looked great. Last night, she was holding her leg and she couldn't dance all the way out. And now I'm super scared.
I think she was selling.
Because she was supposed to dance and she did the thing where she looked at someone and she did that. You can't see the gesture I'm making, but it's that one where you take your hand and you're going like, cut it off. I can't do it. She did that last night and you could very clearly see her doing it where she was trying to dance on one leg, but trying to communicate that like, no, I really can't dance out of this ring.
Okay.
It's time to move on. So, real scared.
Well, the good news is that Alexa Bliss will soon have her third SmackDown Women's title. Poor Naomi. I hope the please so don't let her get hurt.
I got to say one thing though. I think that they need to, and to me this holds true for Naomi and Alexa. I really think that they're kind of putting these girls in these high pressure positions a little bit before they're ready. I know Naomi's been around for a long time, but I think it's another reason why they need to have storylines to establish people before they get too close to the belt. Because once you have that, you know, that's it. Where do you go from there? And I think Alexa Bliss is suffering from that right now. Where does she go from here?
Right.
Where does she go?
All right. Why don't we take a quick second to acknowledge the live proposal that we talked about. We talked about it last week. Talked about it a bunch.
We talked about it a bunch.
John Cena and Nikki Bella. Congratulations, Mazel
Stephanie
Tov.
Nicole Garcia Cole.
So many names.
She's Latina.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's real.
Congratulations to both of you. Do we have to talk about it more?
Yes.
Okay. What do you want to say? Are you excited to see the wedding on E?
Yes, I'm excited to see the wedding on E. I can't wait to see how it plays out later. I'm excited about her big rock. It looks like a piece of glass. Congratulations, Nikki. It's not a belt, but yay.
I think halfway proposing while she was incapacitated was weird. It was weird to remind her of that 18 months
ago. I told y'all that John had something wrong with him.
That was strange.
I have been telling y'all, John got something wrong with him. Because someone who's got some severe issues is like, oh, my girl about to go under. Hey, baby, I love you so much. I'm going to marry you someday. And she's like, what? I like water.
That's like a date rape proposal. That is really weird.
I don't like
it. At this point, I would much rather watch Miz and Maryse pretend to be Cena and Nikki than actually watch Cena and Nikki do anything.
True story, but I think they're going to go to Raw. I think that was what Miz was saying when he was like, oh, hey, this is their last time you're going to see Nikki and John on SmackDown. I think that might be real. I think they might be moving over.
Word up.
Well, we'll see. So to close us out, we're going to talk about what we thought of Mania, but I do want to say before we do it, so I think I have a fun way for us to sum this up. I think that the Usos had a really good point on talking smack, and since we're not putting anything over, I just want to play that real quick.
Hey, check this out, Usos. What we want to know is how every single championship was defended at WrestleMania, except these ones, Usos. Your SmackDown Tag Team Championship.
Represent us for the blue side, and we can't even get on the main card.
Look, I get it.
Hey, we should have been the fourth team. Raw's doing it. We was off tonight.
There was a problem on this show with hot overact, not defending their belts, but instead just appearing in the Andre the Giant Battle Royal. So here's what I'd like to do to close it out. And so we've already talked about a lot of the show. In honor of Johnny and Dave Meltzer, I'd like each of us to give a star rating to this WrestleMania.
I'm going to give WrestleMania... Can we do decimals?
Yes.
Yeah.
3.75 stars.
Very good. Out of five, yes.
Out of five.
Oh, man, I was also going to go with the Ed McMahon 3.25 stars.
3.25?
Yeah, I was also going to go with the 3.25 stars.
Hilarious. I give it 3.5.
All right!
Ooh, didn't get to Fort Julie. What would you give it?
Give it a 4. I'm going to be generous.
Nice.
Ah. Wow. There you go. We covered the gamut from 3 to 4. That does it for Tights and Fights. We are a podcast on the Maximum Fun Network. This week, our hosts are Daniel Radford and Mike Eagle, along with me, Hal Lublin. Our producer is Julian Burrell, who longs to reach the same plane of existence The Undertaker now exists in. Senior producer at Maximum Fun is Laura Swisher. Mike Eagle is the voice behind our theme music as well, so we're putting him over for that. Keep up with us all week long at facebook.com/groups/tightsfights and at tightsfights on Twitter. And if you love the show, remember to hit those 5 stars on iTunes and share us with all your friends. We'll be back next week for even more, you guessed it, wrestling.
Would have been a 5 if I would have just been invited and welcomed into someone's fucking house.
Tights and Fights Podcast. Tights and Fights.
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture.
Artist owned.
Listener supported.